I'm here with Kartik Gada, author of the free book, Atom, which we're here to talk about at the Igniter conference with PodSource. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us about Atom.
So the origins go back many, many years, but I noticed that there was a macroeconomic connection of technological deflation into why formal economists couldn't figure out what's happening in the economy. If you recall the previous financial crisis, there was quantitative easing of $1 trillion or so. The United States started first, then other countries started. Japan started, China, and last of all, Europe. And then before you knew it, $20 trillion of money was printed cumulatively, $200 billion a month ongoing, even as we speak now, in October 2018. And there's still no inflation. The price of oil fell by half at one point, and it's still not gotten anywhere near its high. Natural gas fell by 85%. Gold fell by 40%. Despite $20 trillion of printed money, and the economics profession still isn't curious about why that may be. It's because of technological deflation and technology becoming a larger and larger percentage of the world's GDP, enabling that amount of deflation to be quantified. And that shows that you have to continue this quantitative easing just to halt deflation. And it's not free money, but it's a new monetization of technological deflation, which opens up a host of other possibilities.
Can I stop you for a second?
So for anyone who's not familiar with the term, can you describe what quantitative easing is and technological deflation?
Okay. Technological deflation. Everyone is used to a computer or phone that they buy in the store being lower in price some months later and much lower a few years later, virtually free. But what very few people think about is how that rolls up to the top, to the macro economy. If a greater and greater percentage of what you buy are now these rapidly deflating products, isn't that a larger and larger percent of the economy? And finally, now, as of 2018, it's about 2% of the world economy, that phenomenon. It was too small to matter before, but now it's finally at a point where it's 2%. 2% doesn't sound like a lot, but when 2% is undergoing very rapid deflation, like the price becomes half every 18 months under Moore's law and similar technological trends, suddenly that's about 1% of the whole world GDP is deflation, which comes out to a lot, and that is distorting macroeconomic stats, finally to an extent that is not explained by traditional economics, which doesn't have a technological awareness. This is offset by quantitative easing, which the United States did, which is just a fancy way of calling money printing, in that they bought bonds and mortgage-backed securities, but then other countries did a more extensive form of that, buying a greater range of assets. Now, money printing scares a lot of people because this has caused problems in the past, but that was before the technological era, where a fixed, easily calculated amount of money printing can and should be done just to offset deflation, because deflation is very, very damaging to, you know, debt-based economies like ours. The fear of high inflation is very misplaced. The greatest fear is deflation. And just to halt deflation, you in fact now have to do an immense amount of world quantitative easing every month, maybe $400 billion a month worldwide.
So if anyone wants to read Atom, it's free on the internet, and there's hot links all embedded throughout it. So it's very interesting, and it's a new way to look at literature as well. So how about this? What do you think about the future as this residual kind of goes forward?
The gap between technological progress and the new economics of technology, which is something that I actually teach in a class at Stanford University, it's a 9-week class about that, that disconnect is becoming greater and greater, because on one hand, you have people in the technology industry who kind of get it. They're accustomed to business models where the product drops in price very quickly, yet the profit margin of the company is very, very high. Mm-hmm. In Silicon Valley, people are used to that. People on the outside, they know about it academically, but they haven't really thought through what the implications of that are. The economics that have occurred through these big tech companies are slowly radiating out to the rest of the economy, but in the way you have the government, which has a set of policies that are from the mid-20th century, not from, you know, the modern age, and it's increasingly becoming incompatible with the growth of technology, and this is going to cause a lot of friction as well as hard to explain dislocations in the economy. And I'm hoping that governments can modernize before they're forced to in the midst of a crisis, but in general, it's more likely they will only act after they're forced to when it's too late.
Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for the average person, you know, someone who's not going to be conducting these kinds of you know, deep tests, deep stats, and
well, a lot of things like technological deflation is very problematic. Any deflation, but now we have an inexorable trend of technological deflation, which is rising exponentially as technology diffuses to more of the economy. If you have any type of debt, namely a mortgage or student debt, that is a very scary thing. You know, inflation is painted out to be something bad, but if you own debt, as long as your pay is rising with inflation, inflation is your friend in servicing debt. The scariest thing is deflation, and that is what where the policy minds in government who are not technologically savvy are kind of missing the boat and creating a huge opportunity cost for the average person. Every person is vulnerable to deflation. The average person is vulnerable to automation taking away their jobs, but there's solutions to that when you monetize technological deflation and create a favorable feedback loop. The tax code is kind of against the average person because of tax complexity and non-interlocking taxes. All of that can be modernized and phased out because technology is kind of enabling bigger corporations to get around the tax code, but the average person cannot. So the tax code being something that was created long before there was artificial intelligence is an issue that is giving too little of the gains of technology to the average worker and too much to the very, very top, the biggest corporations and the billionaires who run them. All of that need not be the case if we do some very simple modernizations of our fiscal and monetary policy.
Wow. So by that token, I mean, you can make social change out of economic change.
You can make social change. And the thing is, technology doesn't stop. Like, I mean, if a country like China figures more of this out before the US, and it has, you know, they are more proactive in how they do their central bank monetary creation and more surgical. That's why they are winning in certain areas of technology, possibly even in artificial intelligence. And the United States still has a policy mindset from the mid-20th century, when we didn't have this much, you know, high technology in the economy. We had almost none before this current decade. And that's why China is starting from a position of less baggage and less unlearning to do.
Wow. Let's get moving.
All right, absolutely. Carter. Because technology doesn't wait.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks.